everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. It's true, people. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, along with video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. We've been a little delayed in our July issue, but it's going to be coming out tomorrow, including my conversation with Graham Simsion, author of The Rosie Project and The Rosie Effect, and his most recent, The Best of Adam Sharp. Fascinating guy. Like I said, it's already on YouTube if you want to check it out there, but it's going to be up in the magazine tomorrow, so says my webmaster. You can find it, of course, at authormagazine.org. And, well, we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. And, oof, we just wrapped up our yearly writers' conference, just wrapped it up this weekend, and it was a doozy. Thank you to everybody who attended. Thank you to everybody who said hello. I met so many wonderful people, so many great writers, both beginning and experienced. Had a great turnout at the Fearless Writing Workshop. I'm sorry, we sold out of my books the first day. I'm sorry for all you who couldn't buy it at the conference, but of course, Fearless Writing is available elsewhere. But, it was just wonderful. We'll do it again next year after we take a little break. But yes, it was a great conference, pnwa.org. Join the organization. They don't just put on the conference. They also have monthly classes here in Seattle. And if you can't make those classes, you can even listen to them over the internet. And we do other classes through the fall. It's a great organization, pnwa.org. Speaking of fearless writing, I will be speaking at the University Bookstore in the University District in Seattle, Washington, this Thursday evening. That would be the 27th of July at 7 o'clock. It's a free talk. Come out. If you want me to hear a little conversation about fearless writing, ask me any questions about it. If you have a book you want me to sign, come out. I'll be there. I hope to see you there. So that's this Thursday, 27th, 7 p.m. at the University Bookstore in Seattle. Well, speaking of the Writers' Conference, today's guest is another Northwest author like myself. And like myself, she cut her teeth at the Pacific Northwest Writers' Conference, learning the craft and the business. And I'm talking, of course, about Erica Mitchell, the lovely Erica Mitchell. She is the author now of three novels, Blood Money, Take the By Tide, and her most recent, Take the By Road. I think I mispronounced her. I think I miswrote her title. I don't think it's called Take the By Tide. I think it's just The By Tide. I'm going to have to check with her on that. Doesn't matter, because the Take the By Road is excellent. I highly recommend it. It's funny. It's exciting. It's well written. I'm going to talk to her about that book. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and I want to start by asking, did I miswrite the title of your second novel? Is it Take the By Tide, or is it just the... Which is it?
It's just By Tide. It's just By Tide.
I knew it. Oh, God. Well, that's what happens when I can't cut and paste a bio, Erica. I miswrite something.
No, it's fine. Fine. Well, you know, and all my titles are bad puns, so, you know, you can be forgiven. They're in good fun anyway.
All right, thank you. But I don't like to get things wrong, and I did. So it's just By Tide, people. Forget what I wrote. It's just By Tide. Anyway, well, congratulations on Take the By Road. Now, when did Take the By Road come out?
Let's see. Take the By Road came out at the beginning of July, so it's brand new.
Oh, good. It's just brand new. Well, it's a wonderful book. It's the first of your work I'm familiar with, and I got to say, I quite like it. And I'll tell you, the first thing that grabbed me, this is interesting, one of my clients, actually. The first thing that grabbed me, which is usually the first thing that grabs, I think, all readers, is your voice. You have a very distinctive voice, Erica. I have my answer for this, but when you think of voice, if some new writer wanted to say, what is voice, how would you answer that?
Well, I think the key is to write a character that no one else could write. I'm a pretty lighthearted, sarcastic person myself. And I noticed that there weren't a lot of, you know, spy novels with spies who were, you know, of a lighter-hearted kind of person. And a lot of the people I know in that line of work, and I have met a few people who, you know, put themselves in danger for the sake of other people, they do tend to have kind of a gallows humor to them. And so I just thought, you know, I can make a bad joke at a bad time, so I think I could probably write someone who could make a bad joke at a bad time. And so that's kind of where Bai's voice came through, is that, you know, no matter what happens, he's always able to crack a joke. And so I think if I were to answer that question, like, how do you come up with voice, I would just say, like, what do you bring to the table that's unique, and then to write a character who can also do that as well.
Right. Good answer. Good answer. It has to be.
Thanks.
You know, it's like when you think about voice, literally, my physical voice is unique to me, isn't it? It comes, it's present in every word. And so it should be something that is just such a part of you, you know? It should be in every word.
And I think syntax can have a lot to do with that, too. I've written a character before who wasn't a native English speaker, so I didn't write a lot of contractions for him. His diction was very precise, and his sentence structure itself was pretty simple because he wasn't a native English speaker. And so I think that the way, like, you construct a sentence, too, can have a lot to do with your voice and how a character sounds through writing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and actually, speaking of your voice, the first thing that did stick out, Erica, was how funny it was, you know, and it not like cracking jokes kind of, although there are some kind of jokes, but it's just the tone had a lightness to it. And it hadn't occurred to me that I have read some spy novels, and not a one of them is funny. I can't think of one I've read where if there's a first person, because often they aren't as often in first person, and take the Bai road, and I assume Bai Tide is also in the first person.
Correct.
I can't think of one that actually has a kind of persistent sense of humor to it.
Yeah, well, I grew up watching, you know, the old James Bond movies with my dad, and Mission Impossible and Get Smart,
yeah,
you know, those kinds of movies. And, you know, the old James Bond movies are pretty funny, and he was you know, he would have a nice wry turn of phrase or, you know, a pun to wrap up a scene or something. And, you know, I'm all for verisimilitude, but I also just think that there's a kind of escapism that, you know, putting a humor into kind of a darker scene can give it, so that it's not so dour all the time. And, the series is really my love letter to the old James Bond movies, just because I loved them so much.
However, Erica, the old James Bond movies were kind of comic books in a way, weren't they? I mean, I loved them, too. I watched them growing up. But they were broad and surreal in a way, but I found your book to feel very realistic to me. And I felt like, has this woman walked around the CIA headquarters? What's going on here? So you brought a level of verisimilitude, I think. Yeah. Well, you did a great job capturing what I felt was a lot of the nitty gritty. You know, I read with a writer's eye, so I always think, oh, how did she know that? How'd she know that? Well, how'd she get that detail? Oh, God, it was such a pain to have to get that detail, but she got it. You must like your research.
I do a ton of research. Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, the CIA doesn't let the public do any tours of their headquarters. I know, which is it's a shame, though, because but they are really generous with the pictures and the stories and the history of the facility. And so I stalked their website and got everything I could off of it. And I read a bunch of memoirs from former case officers, and that helps, too. And then I was actually able to interview someone who works at the shipyards over in Seattle in order to get, you know, the scenes on the freighters correct, and the custom scenes and the, you know, the harbor scenes and everything like that from Mexico. So he'd actually been to that shipyard, which was really helpful. And so I was able to kind of pick his brain. But, yeah, I do love the research, and I think you have to if you're going to write espionage because, you know, readers are expecting it.
They are. And this is how you know you're writing the right book. First of all, you found a character that you can relate to, and second, you're willing to do all that stuff. You can't do that unless you just love offering your readers that level of realism. Because that's a lot of work.
Absolutely.
It's not writing, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I try to set my books, and I basically try to think, what's the worst place on Earth right now? And then I set my books there. So the Bai Tide took place in North Korea, and I can't imagine a worse place on Earth right now, except for maybe Liberia.
No.
But and so the research for that gave me nightmares. It literally, like, I when I was trying to write the scenes in North Korea, I would wake up with nightmares just because, you know, my head was so full of all this awful stuff. It was hard to sleep. And then with, you know, Take the By Road, that one takes place with the drug cartels in Mexico. And
yeah.
that's, I mean, that's savagery that we, like, living in America, have a hard time conceiving of. And the research for that was really hard to do as well. But
I felt
like it was necessary. If I was going to put these settings in my books, I felt like I had to do them justice, if only to open people's eyes to what things really are like there.
So here's my question to you. When I was a boy, I first really fell in love with reading. It was fantasy literature. I just fell hard as like a teenager. And I could tell you why. There were certain things about it. But when I started reading other kind of books, I started reading like found Hemingway and Nabokov, and I fell for those kind of books for different reasons, right? So, but you know, they scratched a certain itch. So obviously, suspense and espionage caught your attention at a young age, and it still has your attention. So what is it about espionage? Why these crazy, lying, sneaky guys? Why do you like them so much? Even though I know they're doing good, but it's a strange life.
It is a strange life. And, I mean, for one, I'm a sucker for a good gadget. I just – if it solves a unique problem in an interesting way, I'm all about it. I think it is really cool. But, you know, I wrote a spy who runs because, first of all, I can't run. I actually have a degenerative knee issue, and I can't run, and I miss it. So I write – I wrote a character who runs so I can still run in my, you know, in my imagination
at least.
That's nice. And he can tell when people are lying, and he reads people really well. And I actually cannot tell when someone is lying to me, and I don't read people very well. Yeah, I'm actually on the autism spectrum, so I can't tell when people. And so people tend to be kind of a question mark for me. And so it was really empowering for me to write a character who could do all of these things that I couldn't.
Well, that is fascinating. I write about I raise a son on the autism spectrum, and so you're the first author I've interviewed who at least admits she's on the autism spectrum.
There's lots of us.
Well, that's
everywhere.
Fascinating. Now, so you don't feel like you can really read people's when people are lying to you?
Oh, I can't. Absolutely. No, if someone says something to me, I take it at face value. Absolutely.
Okay.
And it, like, especially if what they're saying doesn't match what their facial expression looks like, I don't know what to make about that. So my closest friends are really used to helping me figure out what people are trying to say, because I just don't. For some reason, my brain just doesn't do it on its own.
What a nice way to live, just believing everybody.
Well, it gets really confusing though, because sometimes people aren't telling you the truth, and then you get in trouble or something, and it's very confusing sometimes. So
although
I wrote a character who doesn't have those issues.
It's true, and you do a great job of portraying his interest in lying and his understanding of how to lie, so it's very believable, his sort of description of what one does to lie effectively. But you talk about sarcasm is to say one thing and mean another,
mm-hmm.
and that is, you said, your go-to for sense of humor.
It is, yes. Well, that's pretty easy to do, though, because it's kind of, if you can identify what you're trying to say, and then you can just say it in the opposite way, that's really all sarcasm is. And so it's pretty easy to do that, and it gets, you know, it's pretty popular way to make people laugh, so
it
works
is.
Okay.
So you and I met back in 2011. I don't know what I was up to. I had recently joined the PNWA at that moment. I guess I'd been doing it for a little while, been doing author for a little while, at the conference. And so you're a Seattle writer. You used to go to the and then in those days you were still kind of a pup, I guess, but so now you've graduated, you're publishing books. So I mean, aside from just the mechanics of finding a publisher and so on, what changed for you? How did you grow that you allowed that to happen, that you went from someone just trying to win the PNWA contest hopefully to now having 3 books out? What changed for Erica?
Well, I think that there are some basic rules that all authors need to learn at some point, and I think conferences are great for that. When I submitted my first book to the first conference that I ever entered, it had a 20-page prologue. It had a lot of other, you know, it had just handfuls of adverbs on every page. It started with dialogue. It, you know, just like some of these cardinal things that unless you're really, really good, you really can't pull off. And I just didn't realize that that was one of the rules. And so I think that, you know, when I went to my first conference, it was really eye-opening to just learn all the things that I still needed to learn. Because I've always been a competent writer, but there really is a craft to writing a novel, especially to writing a commercially successful novel. And I think you have to learn that before, you know, you have to learn how much you need to learn before you can start to learn it, essentially. So that was where I was at in 2011. And when I pitched directly to my publisher at Champagne Books, she asked me to send her the first 50 pages. And so that was when I took everything I learned from the conference and furiously spent a couple months applying it to my manuscript. And that's what I turned into her. And that became Blood Money. But it needed a lot of work because I realized that there were a lot of these mistakes that I was making. And she loved it, and she published it. And then I took a character from Blood Money, and actually that's what became the Bi series. Bi actually made his first appearance in Blood Money.
Man, you must be a fast learner. You must be a fast learner, Erica, because there's a big difference between knowing not to put in a 20-page prologue and starting with dialogue and what I read. So you learned a lot,
and
you learned it quickly, I got to say. No, you did.
Well, I love the craft of it. I really do. You know, I read, let's see, I just finished reading Save the Cat by Blake Snyder.
And, I interviewed Blake when he was still knocking around. He was such a nice guy.
You did? Oh, yeah. He's very
affable
in his book.
Oh, he was so sweet. He was so sweet. So that's a good book. It's a good storytelling book.
That's what I thought. I'd never thought of putting scenes together in exactly that way. And so I'm really excited when I start my new project in a couple months, I'm really excited to apply that to it because I'd never thought of scenes in terms of that kind of structure before.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like that kind of craft where you just, I can put a sentence together, but that's not the issue. The issue is how do you put a sentence together that moves people, that, you know, makes them feel something. And I feel like there's always room to improve on that. And I love the process of learning how to do it better.
Yeah, I kind of talked over Erica there. We were referring to Save the Cat by Blake Snyder, one of these Bibles that have grown out of the film industry about the sort of structure of the traditional Hollywood movie. And it is, if you're into that kind of storytelling, I think particularly for the genres, it's super helpful because it just breaks things down into pieces kind of. And Blake was a wonderful teacher too, so good book. Third book in. Now you love the craft, and you've got. And what's the next book going to be called? What's the next Bi book?
It's going to be called Bi Treason.
Bi Treason. Okay. Let me ask you this, because maybe I'm just strange this way, but to me, writing is like really how I understand my life, right? And how I understand everything. And there's always something new that's got my interest that I'm thinking about, that I'm chewing on, about writing or about life and how they apply to each other. Is there something that's got your interest right now in your writing life that has recently come to your attention that you're curious or hot about or fascinated by?
Oh, I'll always.
Always.
Yeah,
what is it
I mean,
now? What is it right now for Erica that's so interesting?
Well, I really want to move my next project that I'm going to be working on soon is going to have a female protagonist, which I've never done before. And I just, after watching Wonder Woman and, you know, I've always loved Joss Whedon's work. He's one of my big writing role models, and just listening to him and the way his position on feminism and, you know, the importance of writing female roles that are not they're not trying to make a statement. They just are awesome women doing awesome things, because why shouldn't women be doing awesome things? I just really like that approach. And so that's what's got my interest right now, is I really want to write a female character and do justice to it. And so it'll be a good challenge. I haven't done it yet, so I'm excited.
You know what'll help in that case? The fact that you're a woman.
You think so, but I know a lot of women.
I think you'll have a head start on some other writers.
You think so.
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't know anything about Take the Bi Road when I picked it up. I knew nothing. I just knew the title and that you wrote it. And so I started reading, and I did not know it was a guy at first. I just assumed it was a woman because everyone is constantly being told, strong female lead, strong female lead, strong female lead. And you're female, right? But it wasn't. But I'll tell you, I also didn't find him – I also found him a believable male. So you understand something about my brothers and me.
Well, I think I was actually listening to Gail Lynn, so she's like the godmother of the espionage genre, and I was listening to her speak at Thriller Fest last week, and she was talking about that and about how, you know, young girls, we grow up with a lot of male, like, heroes in movies, television, books, and stuff like that. So it's actually really easy for us to identify with the male characters because, you know, it's what we grew up with. And and so it's actually really hard, like, when the shoe's on the other foot, for male readers to identify with female heroines. And so I'm not sure if that's true, because I haven't heard that from other men. But I will say that as a woman, I did not find it hard to write a male character just because it seemed like a pretty comfortable shoe to wear, honestly.
Yeah, and honestly, when I was writing fiction, I didn't think twice about writing female characters in the first person or third. I didn't care. I felt it wasn't that big a leap, frankly, for me either. And so, it doesn't really surprise me that you. I kind of feel like you have to do it, since, like it or not, the other gender is half the population. You don't want to limit yourself that much. You know?
Well, exactly, and I feel like you should write the character as they, you know, as they should be. And I'm not going to be scared about writing a. And also, he's Chinese American. I'm not Chinese American, but I interviewed a lot of Chinese American friends that I have, because I live in the Pacific Northwest, where we do have quite a few people who are first generation, second generation Chinese. And so that was really helpful in terms of shaping, like, the issues and the pressures that he would have grown up with that I, from my upbringing, would not have been aware of. And so it was really eye-opening for me to kind of learn more about what people with a different background would go through growing up that I would probably have missed out on entirely, because I just, you know, it's not the kind of thing I talk to people about usually, unless I'm interviewing them for a book.
Right. Well, you like your homework. You gotta.
It's
one of the reasons I tried my hand at historical fiction, and I kind of, or a book, I should say, set a certain number of years ago, and I realized, like, I just don't care that much. I just want to write about exactly what is happening right around me and in my head. And so it's why I write about my own life now. I knew you got to love this. You've got to just want to dig into it. And I just didn't. And so I had to back out of it.
Well, felt that same way about Chick Lit. I tried to write it. That was actually the first book I ever wrote in Chick Lit, and it was terrible because I just didn't care. I was like, none of these problems are interesting to me.
I teach fearless writing, and one of the things I teach people is that you will never be better than when you're just interested for the sake of being interested. It's what I call unconditional love for your story. You're interested just because you're interested. You can't be any better than that. How can you be better than that? You can't be.
Well, exactly. I think you have to, and I strongly feel like if you're not interested in what you're writing, then you can't write it in an interesting way. So I absolutely agree. I think you have to love what you're researching, and it has to be where your brain goes to play.
Absolutely. Okay. So now you said you've always been a competent writer. Did you write as a young, as a schoolgirl, as a high schooler? Did you know writing was in your future?
Well, actually, my mother's a published author, so she was always very encouraging and helped me, you know, come up with story ideas. I won a big writing contest when I was 11, actually, and it got put into a book that was carried at a local library, which was really exciting.
Wow.
So I was always that kid who, you know, loved the writing assignments in school, and if the teacher asked for one page, I'd turn in five because I just liked it so much. But, you know, in high school and college, because of all the academic work I was doing, because I got a degree in psychology, and with all the academic writing I was doing, I honestly stopped writing for fun for a long time because it just kind of beats it out of you after a while. And I didn't discover my love of writing again until my first job out of college, and I hated it. I hated that job so much. I started a blog because I needed to blow off steam about it, and eventually I had a lot of readers, and they were all saying, you should write a book because, you know, this is really fun to read, so you should write a book, and that's how I ended up starting to write my first novel.
So you did the academic writing. Boy, that can kill a fiction writer. I mean, nothing wrong necessarily with academic writing, but it is a very particular take, and it is not the take the fiction writer can use, I don't think.
You know, it was, I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad I got my psychology degree. It helps me to, I do a lot of research on post-traumatic stress disorder. There was a really good book called On Killing by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman that was really foundational for me in developing my spy character, because it details, like, the psychological toll and emotional toll and spiritual toll of killing on people who have to kill people for a living. And that was something different that I wanted to do with my character. I actually wanted, you know, killing people when he did have to, I wanted it to affect him, but I needed to know
Thank
how
you.
That affects the person. And
Thank
so, you,
you
know, my background in psychology helped me to kind of sift through that, you know, kind of heavier research material.
You know, it's tricky for suspense writers because people are getting killed all the time, but the truth is killing people has a humongous effect. I mean, I was hosting a documentary about post-traumatic stress disorder in soldiers because of the killing that they do. It can make them kind of loopy because it's just not what we're on the planet to do, you know? And I think it's great that you're addressing that in the novels because it's tough. It's not easy to do, you know? It's not easy to do. I've never done it, but everyone I know who has done it has said it's not easy to do.
Well, and I think
so
it shouldn't be easy to do. A couple people have commented who read By Tide and then read Take the Byroad. They said, you know, Take the Byroad is a little darker and he's a little more circumspect and a little more, you know, he seems different. And that was actually exactly what I was going for, because I didn't want to write someone who could just shoot someone in the face and then be like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to go have dinner now. You know, I wanted it to be, you know, difficult for him. I wanted it to change him, and I wanted to see, like, if someone got into this line of work, even if they got into it for the right reasons, how would it change them over time? And that was really the most interesting part of the story for me, because I love the explosions, don't get me wrong, but
right.
I just wanted to, it was that change that I wanted to see. You know, I wanted to see how could you shift a character over the course of a series.
It's so funny. You love the explosions. Of course, this isn't the movie, so the explosions are happening where exactly? They're happening in your mind, aren't they? But you still love just writing about the explosions.
I do.
But they might
I
as well
do.
Be real, right?
Well, if you write them right, they will seem real, right?
That's right. Well, that's your job. It should be. It's like it's real. Absolutely. All right, so... I'm not quite through with you yet, Erica. But just want to make sure everybody knows. So Take the Byroads out. Best place to buy it still, like Amazon books. What's your best advice for people finding Take the Byroad?
I mean, it's everywhere. If you want a print book, then Amazon or Lulu are going to be your best bets. If you want an ebook, you can really buy it anywhere: iBooks, Kindle, Kobo, Nook, whatever, what have you. It'll be there.
Yeah, a lot of suspense and romance in particular sell a lot of books and e-books. I think that's probably their main format these days, I think. And how was Thriller Fest, by the way, for the uninitiated? No, I've never been myself, but I have many friends who have. It's the big, big New York writers conference/literature conference for thriller writers in New York City every year. You went this year. How was it?
Oh, this was my third one, and every time I go, it is the most fun. I mean, we always joke when we're there, it's a hotel full of people who plot murders for a living, so it's very dangerous. but it's great, and I, you know, the ITW, the International Thriller Writers, which is the organization that puts the conference on, they do a really good job of cultivating this culture of there's not this sense of, like, there's us versus them, like, there's not the super bestseller authors, and you can't talk them to them or approach them or ask them questions. Like, it's everyone is just there to be supportive and encouraging, and they're all talking about other people's work and encouraging you to read other people's stuff, and it's a really awesome culture that they have promulgated. And so it's always a hoot every time I go, and I always learn so much. Like, this time they had the ATF and also the U.S. Marshals come over and talk about what they do, and one of the U.S. Marshals got all, you know, suited up in his, like, tactical gear and brought his M4 in to show everybody, and I texted a picture of him to my husband, and I was like, I'm having more fun than you, because it is the most fun to learn about this stuff, and it's like the only place I know that you can.
That's awesome. I always hear raves about it. Everyone is, I have a bunch of friends who go there and have a great time. And so, are you gonna go again next year, do you think?
That's the hope. Yep, I hope so. I mean, barring any kind of extraordinary circumstances.
That's the plan. Well, good for you. Yes, you got to. Okay. Well, now I have one final question for you. If you're familiar with these interviews, you may already know this question, but I'm going to ask it for you anyway, which is this: finish this sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
If writing has taught me anything, it's that I still have so much to learn about. There's nothing
yeah.
that will make you feel the extent of how big the world is and how much there is still to learn about it than, you know, doing research constantly about other places in the world and how everything is all tied together. And so, yes, if writing has taught me anything, it's that there's still a lot I have to learn.
Do you like learning stuff?
I do. I always have, and, you know, hopefully I always will. And I think that's definitely my favorite part is when you're just starting a project and you're really diving in and you're, you know, stalking places on Google Maps and you're reading memoirs and watching documentaries and everything. I love it.
That's great. Erica, I see a bright future for you, my dear. And
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to your next book. Congratulations on Take the By Road, and everybody, go out and buy it. You won't be disappointed.
Thank you so much for having me on, Bill. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And, well, yes, keep on learning, people. I just learn and learn. Every time I think I figured it out, and I do from time to time, don't get me wrong, I realize I just have more to learn. I do indeed. Listen, thanks, as always, to my producer and good friend, R.J. Jeffries. We'll be back again next week with Donna Bear Stein. Until then, find something you love, just like Erica did, and go do it. You don't have to worry where it's going. Just do it, and it'll take you someplace new.